You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Rachel Krieger, and you are listening to another episode of Last Word Soccer Club Radio, brought to you by Last Word on Sports, Inc., the Beautiful Game Network, and our awesome sponsors, Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. Once again, I'm handed the hosting reins. Matt and Dan are taking the night off, getting ready for a big weekend of international soccer, so we've got a lot to discuss. I'm not by myself, of course. And the last time I hosted this podcast, I had these two gentlemen on with me. We are recording on Wednesday night ahead of the U.S. men's national team game against Morocco. So if you're listening to this on Thursday, which is probably when you are going to be listening to this, we aren't really doing any analysis because the game will either be kicking off when we're still doing this or hasn't started yet. But anyway, let me bring my co-host in. So Jamie Rook over in England, how are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you for having me on again.
Always happy to have you, my friend. Harvey Cruz in the red New York. I'm going to say it's red for you because Red Bulls are looking pretty good so far. What do you think, Harvey?
They're looking tremendous. And I couldn't be happier because it's been a long time since I've seen a game, a performance like that against not only against any team, but against DC United. It's very fun. I saw two goal of the year candidates. I saw four goals. I was in and out of food lines trying to get some food. It was a bunch of fun.
The last time I went to a game at Red Bull was right before the Women's World Cup. I went to go see USA and Mexico. And I love Red Bull Arena. I think it's a beautiful stadium. But just like the way U.S. soccer had everything laid out was so bad. And it was so hot that day. And my mom and I were at the tail end of our trip to New York. And we left in the second half. We were supposed to stay another night. And I was like, let's just go. I want to go home. I'm over it. So, but my trip to New York back in November was a lot more pleasant than that. But yeah, Red Bull Arena, it's a beautiful stadium. I saw that you went to the game. And I'll give you your time to, you know, dunk on DC United. Don't worry, I'll give you your time. But before we get into some of the results that happened this past weekend in Major League Soccer, sorry, I think I'm coming down with like a sinus cold. So if I'm ever distracting or whatever, I'm sorry. But Charlotte FC made headlines for potentially all of the wrong reasons, firing their head coach Miguel Angel Ramirez after, 16 points I think they have on the table. Not the worst start, not the best start, but a decent start for a team that kind of shot themselves in the foot in a lot of ways. And I mean, the head coach even straight up said, you know, we're screwed at the start of the season. I think most people remember that. You know, Charlotte has been a little bit tight-lipped on what has happened. Their sporting director, if I say his name wrong, I apologize in advance, Zoran Corneta, told the media, there's not much point to speculate to what exactly happened. We made a decision for the best of the club. I wouldn't want to go into details. It's not going to help anybody. Some of you might think it's difficult to explain, but it happens in sports very often. At the end of the day, we had no choice. We had to do it. Harvey, I'm going to go to you first. Did they have a choice?
Yeah, they did. They could have just rolled it out because nobody expected anything from Charlotte FC, which was kind of the weird thing in all this because usually sack a manager, 14 games into a season, like if you want to take the Premier League or the Bundesliga or any other top five league if you want, you normally second manage it when you have expectations that you're going to like proceed into Europe or you're going to go far in a cup competition and stuff like that. This team wasn't expected to do anything. And the fact that they sacked the manager of a team who is 2 points off a playoff spot is really a bit weird. It's disappointing from the way I see it because he's good. He's gotten his players up on the up. And the fact that he's only lasted, what is it, 2 months into the year, that's what annoys me the most. And now we have Tom Bogut actually put this out on his Twitter the other day. Let's see if I can find it. So, in MLS, 12 of the 28 coaches have been in charge for less than 2 years. It's a bit mad. 17 of them have been in charge for less than 3 years. So, the top five longest tenured coaches are Giovanni Savarese of Portland, 2018. Adrian Heath of Minnesota, 2017. Brian Schmetzer, 2016, with Seattle. Jim Curtin, Philadelphia, from 2014. And, of course, a guy who wouldn't get fired even if he burned down a whole stadium. Peter Vermes, Sporting Kansas City, 2009. So, I mean, we don't really see this. Like, in football, in the National Football League, coaches come and go almost by the week because of how crazy the turnover is. In a game like this, you usually want to ride it out, say, hey, listen, it's a bad stretch of games. We'll give them, like, another few months. Maybe another cup game, see how it goes. I don't understand why they would sack him. Like, he says the team is screwed before they play a game. And, of course, you know, we run with it because maybe it is true they're screwed. Or maybe it's not. He says probably placating or something. But they're not screwed. They didn't expect to do anything. I picked them as one of the candidates to finish bottom of the conference. Maybe bottom of the league. And they're far from it right now. So, I don't get it. I personally don't like it because we need to give these coaches a chance to at least showcase their stuff before greed and power struggles happen. So I don't like it at all.
Yeah, before I make one point, Harvey, I'd like to introduce you to the National Women's Soccer League, where like no coach has been in charge for a long time. Humor, soccer humor. But no, I think you made a really good point. They're an expansion club. Nobody really expected anything from them. Nobody should expect anything from expansion clubs. So just not letting him finish out the whole year is crazy. Jamie, what kind of message does this send from Charlotte? You know, looking, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how nervous should coaches be going into this job, hearing from Charlotte that like they want to be interviewed? What kind of message does this send?
I think, as you both alluded to, the general consensus seems to be that any issues are off field and not on the field. Because, yeah, as you said, they're within, 2 points of the playoffs. They're exceeding most people's expectations. So I think it definitely would be a concern for any potential new managers that just because they're performing with results on the field doesn't necessarily mean they have that job security that you'd otherwise expect. I think there was a lot of reports saying that Karol Swiderski, one of their DPs, was at the heart of the discontent towards Ramirez, and that he was almost speaking in the sporting director's ear about it. So it clearly seems that player power is worth something these days. And yeah, it just makes you wonder how fragile the job could be if results aren't everything. We've seen certain mistreatment with DC. Obviously, this is of a different level, but it still provides some question marks, especially given how brief the sporting director was in the quote you read out.
Yeah, I just... And the fact that it came after they lost to Seattle, I mean, I hope that's not like one of the reasons, because it's tough to beat Seattle, and I don't think Charlotte should ever fire a team after beating... or a coach after losing to a team like, you know, Seattle or like Philadelphia or, you know, Columbus or whatnot. But yeah, it's definitely a head scratching move, and we'll just see where Charlotte goes from here. We'll see where Ramirez goes from here. And we'll just keep posted on that. Moving on, we're going to talk about a couple different MLS games that happened this weekend. And just to kind of continue on to the trend of Charlotte FC, I'm going to talk about when Seattle played Charlotte on, I think that was Sunday. Yeah, that was a Sunday game because I actually got to watch it for once. So Seattle beat Charlotte, and it was kind of a doozy of a game. Ben Bender got on the scoreboard first at Lumen Field. Always tough to play in Seattle with that crowd in that stadium. But he got on the board first. The ball kind of like ricocheted off the post. It looked like it hit Stefan Fry, and then Bender got it in. It was a very weird play. But Charlotte got on the board first, and they had the lead for a good 50 minutes. And then, of course, the tandem of Jordan Morris and Raul Ruiz Diaz score, and they win the game for Seattle. And I picked this game to highlight because of pretty much of how Seattle has been doing this year. Brian Schmetzer has said it multiple times that they don't want to be seen as the team who they make history, they win CONCACAF Champions League, and then they don't do anything with the MLS season. Seattle has historically been a team that has started slow and then kind of kicks it into high gear in the summer and then goes on to make the playoffs. They've made the playoffs every single year that they've been a club since 2009. But, you know, aside from their game in Colorado where they lost to the Rapids 1-0, they've been doing pretty good. They played some tough teams. They had a good win over Minnesota. They had another tight, good win over the Houston Dynamo. And the win over Charlotte is a good win, even if it is against a lesser opponent. They have a really tough schedule coming up in June with Vancouver, LAFC, and Sporting Kansas City on the docket in the next few weeks after the international break. But I just think that, like, nobody should be worried about the Seattle Sounders. They're the Seattle Sounders. I know they're in 10th place right now, but there's still plenty of season left. And I just think that, you know, they're not going to be a team that wins CCL and then doesn't do anything with the MLS season. So just keep your eye on Seattle. They got a tough couple games coming up. But it should be interesting to watch for sure. I'm specifically looking forward to that LAFC game. Harvey, we'll go to you next. I'll let you dunk on me. I just had my moment of glory, so whatever. I'll deal with it. Go ahead, sir. Tell us about your New York Red Bulls defeating who I predicted to be second place in the Eastern Conference and still holding out some hope on DC United.
Yeah, I don't know where you come up with any hope at this point. You can 360 dunk that chance into the river if you want. That thing is gone. It was really something to behold that a game like that could be boring as it was for the first 45 minutes. If you're able to get a replay, just skip the first half because it was awful to watch. Both teams didn't really give much I don't want to say effort, but they didn't really go for it for the first half. It was just three shots on target, I believe, the first half. And then, boom, the whole thing just set off in the second half. I don't know what Gerhard Struber told those boys. But you got the goal from Luquinhas, which was a shot by Morgan in the box. And Luquinhas, somehow he taps it in, and he nutmegs someone as he taps in the goal. And then the second, third, and fourth goals are pretty crazy because the second goal is the Luquinhas volley, which I'm seeing on Twitter for some reason is not the goal of the week. Morgan's goal is the goal of the week, which I guess is fine. But look at it again. Be fair to Luquinhas. The man is sliding downward and hits it with one foot, sliding on his right foot, which I believe is a stronger foot. And he picks out for 90. You couldn't do that again if you tried. And so, like, for me, that's goal of the week. And Luquinhas' performance was excellent. Again, the Rebels pulled out this stat, and I believe it's a pretty telling one. And it is that Luquinhas, in his last 10 starts, has scored or assisted in 8 of them. The man is verging on newcomer of the year territory. I picked Facundo Torres from Orlando City for that award. This their time, I guess. But Luquinhas is balling out. He's easily one of the first names on the team sheet when it comes to this. And then you get Morgan's volley, which if you look at the replay, it comes off a foot of a defender from DC, and he just laces one. And I'm looking at the angles, and it like swerves past Bill Hamid. And poor Bill Hamid, because I'm sure he thought a long time ago that his days in DC were done when he went to Europe. But then when he came back to DC, he was like, oh, welcome back and stuff. And then reality sets in that you have a new coach and your team pretty much stinks, and you only have, at best, two options that can deliver goals, maybe three. No taxi for that game. Apparently, he was out with back spasms, from what I read on Twitter, and from DC people over there as well. And then the fourth goal, which was interesting because Caden Clark comes into the game. He replaces Klimala, and he becomes the false nine. So I'm not sure if there's anything that can be built off that yet. Given the striker situation with Fletcher out with a knee injury, Tom Bartle just can't hack it at this level, unfortunately. And Zach Ryan just came in from college. So he's going to be stuck in the second team. And we'll probably get looks in the Open Cup, barely, maybe. We're in the quarterfinals now, so I doubt it. So yeah, 4-1. Four second half goals, 3 points, the first home win of the season, two golazos. Luis Morgan and Luquinhas are on the team of the week for the MLS. And Luis Morgan, I believe, has 6 goals and an assist in the league. So not bad for a new signing from an Inter Miami team that didn't have many ballers in that squad. And like 3 points against DC United, I'll take it any day of the week. The fact that it happened like this, I'll take it twice as much any day of the week. And look, the Rebels are in a dogfight because this Eastern Conference is tight. Jamie mentioned it, I believe, a week ago or 2 weeks ago about how hot NYCFC are. I mean, it's been like overnight. They're now in first place. They're taking over Philadelphia. The top 7 teams are separated by 8 points. The top 4 teams are separated by 3 points. So it's going to be tough, tough, tough. And there's going to be no rest for the weary because we talked about Charlotte earlier, and Charlotte hosts the Rebels in their first game after the international break. So it's going to be something to watch out for.
Okay, so Jamie is better than both of us because while me and Harvey are over here homering, he's going to be neutral and talk about same scoreline, but different game. LA Galaxy versus Austin FC. So, Jamie, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Yeah, I think there was definitely a lot of interesting games this weekend, whether it was the 7-goal thriller in Montreal or RSL's win over Houston. But yeah, I've gone with Austin's ultimately unsuccessful trip to Dignity Health Sports Park. It was a Western Conference matchup with both sides currently in the playoffs, aiming to push for a home game. And it was ultimately after a quiet, goalless first half, Greg Ranney's side came flying out of the blocks from going behind. Diego Fernandez scored for Austin. But then Daniel Vlach was obviously the man of the match. I think he was MLS Player of the Week as well, and rightly so. Scored twice, assisted twice with Chicharito and Efra Alvarez also scoring. So yeah, it's a good bounce back almost from the Galaxy. They're on a poor run. Then they go and beat LAFC in the El Tráfico in Open Cup, and now they've beaten Austin as well. So it takes, I think it's taken the Galaxy to within a point of Austin. They're both, yeah, as I said, fighting out for a hopeful spot in the a home opener in the playoffs. And yeah, it's looking up for the Galaxy, whereas Austin are starting to struggle a bit. They one win in the last 5, which was against LAFC for the Texas side. But yeah, that's in that run. They've lost to the Galaxy twice now. So potential bogey team for them. And the Galaxy are definitely going in the right direction, whereas Austin are not.
Good stuff, Jamie. And how did New England do? We'll give you a second to homer there. I didn't see how they did.
They drew with the Philadelphia Union, which was
tough game.
Yeah, wasn't able to watch the game, wasn't available over here, but from what I hear, it was almost one-sided in the Revs' favour, although that is from Revs fans, so it may be slightly biased. But yeah, from the stats and from the sounds of it, it was their game to lose, and they were only able to get a point. Gustavo Bow returned to the side and returned to the score sheet.
Mm-hmm. We gave you that minute to homer because you're better than us, and you decided to pick an actual, actually enticing game. No, I'm kidding. Both of those other games that we picked were good too, even if that means DC lost. But so the international break has technically started. There are a few games kind of sprinkled in there, but we are going to move on to a different slew of games. We're going to go very general here, folks, because like I said, at the beginning of the show, we are recording on Wednesday before the U.S. Men's national team plays. And just because of how scattered the games are, who knows when you'll be listening to this and watching these teams. But we are going to talk a little bit about the CONCACAF Nations League preview. I wasn't on the last podcast when the roster got announced, but if you want to hear the boys talk about the roster, I will put the link in our show notes on lastwordonsoccer.com. You can check that out. And of course, Raheem and our Canadian guys have you covered on the Canadian men's national team. Harvey's got you covered on El Salvador. Trevor, I think, will have us covered on Mexico, and I'll have you guys covered on Costa Rica. So we're going to just do very general contenders and pretenders here for the CONCACAF Nations League. Just to go over the groups, though, so this is all in, what do they call it, League A. So there's three different leagues based on rankings and performances. So League A is kind of the top tier league. So in Group A, it's Jamaica, Mexico, and Suriname. In Group B, Costa Rica, Martinique, and Panama. Group C is Canada, Curacao, and Honduras. And Group D, El Salvador, Grenada, and the United States of America. So Harvey, I'm going to let you go first here because I'm very interested specifically in your pretender. Tell me, who are your contenders and pretenders in CONCACAF Nations League?
I'm going to go, if I can pick a handful, I will go Costa Rica and the U.S. for my contenders. And Canada too, but I want to be a little bit bold out here and pick Costa Rica, USA. Listen, the U.S., in my opinion, have the best depth of any team in this league. Just besides the fact that they can pick out players from Europe and players from MLS, they are my team to, I guess, watch out for. And because it's the USA, they're going to be the most intriguing team to watch because of A, Greg Berhalter, big Greg Berhalter's players, and C, Greg Berhalter's fans on Twitter. So that's going to be a bunch of fun. And I just believe in Costa Rica because as long as they have Keylor Navas in goal, they're going to be fine. I'm not sure how much longer he can go, but I'm sure he can give us at least another year and a half or two. And of course, there's stalwart players like Joel Campbell and Anibal Godoy and stuff like that. I believe Anibal Godoy is in Costa Rica. I think he's in Panama.
He's in Panama.
There you go. Thank you. But I'm stepping in Costa Rica. My pretenders are going to be Honduras and Jamaica. I don't believe in Honduras whatsoever, given how bad they were for World Cup qualifying. The fact that they sacked their coach midway throughout because they didn't have a win until, I believe, the last few games. And their attack was poor. Their defense was awful. Their midfield is probably one of the more redeeming qualities, but their attack isn't that good, and their defense is a bit poor. And for Jamaica, I just need to see it because I remember this. I picked Jamaica to go fourth, I believe, third or fourth, to qualify for the World Cup, or at least to go to the Intercontinental playoff, and they stunk. I believe they were just above El Salvador in the final places. And really, El Salvador is neither contender nor pretender for this. I mean, they'll qualify for the Gold Cup, but they're going to be in like that middle of the road pack. But for Jamaica, with all the attacking talent, you have Andre Blake in goal. You have Corey Burke, Mikel Antonio, Leon Bailey in attack. that alone could probably win you some games. Kamar Lawrence in defense, well, I'm not sure he's starting much games now, or even in MLS either. So yeah, my contenders are Costa Rica, United States, Canada goes without saying, Mexico goes without saying, Honduras and Jamaica are my pretenders.
I have to laugh about the fact that Costa Rica always gets put in a group with Panama. And just because I was right, I still get to brag to you and to Dan and to Matt about how everybody wants to stick a fork in Costa Rica. And I said, no, 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 no. Hang on a second. And then they made it into fourth place. And now I think what they play New Zealand in the Intercontinental. So beat the mailman for sure. Jamie, do you have any thoughts, contenders or pretenders for CONCACAF Nations League coming up?
I'll be honest, I'll have to keep it pretty basic because I can't pretend to be clued in on the likes of Martinique and Curaçao and all them. But from what I've seen, I've been looking at the Jamaica squad and I think I agree with Harvey in that they're yet to properly deliver. There's been a lot of talk about these various players changed nationality to represent Jamaica, and especially a fair few from England, obviously, as Harvey mentioned, Leon Bailey. I don't think Mikel Antonio's actually in the Nations League squad, which quite a blow considering how important he's been for West Ham the last few years. But and then, like, yeah, Ravel Morrison, Andrew Blake, there's a lot of decent players in there, but Jamaica are yet to really show, and with Mexico in their group, although they're not the giant they once were, it's still a tough battle. And then I'm wearing the USA shirt, so I'll say USA for a contender. It's pretty obvious. It's not exactly controversial, but I think they're, along with Canada and Mexico, obviously the big three in the region. Sad to see not only Miles Robinson with a long-term injury, but now not so long-term, but Georgi Mihailovic having to pull out of the roster for these games. This was like his opportunity to prove himself with the World Cup on the horizon, and it's definitely a convoluted position, so any minutes he could have got would have gone a long way for him, which is a shame for him given how well he's performed in Montreal. But I think still it's such a strong squad, even with some key players injured, and there's a lot of, hopefully anyway, for US fans, there's a lot of debates to be settled, whether it be who's going to be the goalkeeper, who could be the centre-back alongside Zimmerman, number nine issues as well, so there's a lot to be discussed around the US, so they'll be hoping they can get the job done.
Yeah, I think the US, Harvey, you made a good point about their depth, but God, they are so injured right now. And it's like, it sucks that it's happening to all these young guys. Georgi Mihailovic, when I saw that he had to pull out of camp with that ankle injury, I was just, like, I have been critical of him in the past, but he has been really, really good this year. And I don't think anybody can say anything negative about his play whatsoever. I'm gonna go with a little bit of an upset here, saying Suriname beats Jamaica in their game, to be honest with you. I'm a proponent of chaos, and I think that would be interesting. And to see a team like Suriname, to see these, you know, quote unquote little guys like Suriname, Curaçao, Martinique qualify into League A over a team like, you know, Trinidad and Tobago is definitely impressive. So I'm interested to see how those little guys do. I don't expect too much from them. I think Costa Rica is obviously going to be a contender. They're riding a high right now, and they can use all of the good matches and good confidence boosts that they can get ahead of their intercontinental playoff, which I also predict that they will win. But I think they beat Panama, and I think they beat, who else they have in their group? Martinique. The U.S.'s group is definitely interesting because I think El Salvador, you know, is going to try to frustrate them. I don't think they're going to lose to them, but they are definitely going to frustrate them. Grenada, I think the U.S. will get a win, but it's one of those teams that, you know, there's not a lot of film on them. So you can't really, like, how much can you really prepare for them? It's something that the U.S. women's national team talks about a lot when they play in these CONCACAF qualifiers, like, oh, well, we don't have film on a lot of these teams, don't really know what we're up against. So I think it'll be interesting. Nations League is definitely interesting. It's, you know, there's some games that I think are going to have some big score lines. I think there's going to be some tough losses for maybe these little guys. But I think it's pretty general consensus that the United States, Costa Rica, Canada, they perform well and they perform at the top of their group. I think Canada, out of all of them, probably has the easiest group. Costa Rica, I would have said them, but, you know, Panama is Panama. They're going to frustrate them because, like I said, those two are always in, like, the same, you know, circle together. So, okay, cool. So moving on from that, we're just going to jump right into pick'ems. This is kind of a shorter show with the international break and whatnot, but we're going to jump right into pick'ems. So on June 4th at 10 p.m., and then on June 7th at 7 p.m., El Salvador and Grenada play against each other both times. Harvey, this is your area of expertise, so tell us what you're looking for La Selecta, and what do you think is going to happen in these games?
I'm looking forward to seeing how this attack shapes up. They've gone through a number of forwards, and whether it's Joaquin Rivas, Jairo Henriquez, I believe Christian Hill got the goal against Costa Rica when they played in El Salvador a few months ago. They've been trying different things. One thing is for certain, Enrico Dueñas is the young player to watch in that team. He's playing in Holland. He's on loan. I'm not sure if he's going to go on loan again this summer or what's going to happen there, but he's one to watch for that team. Against a team like Grenada, I think a 2-1 is what I'm thinking about. Eric Zabaleta won't be in this. I believe he's out injured, so he probably won't be fit for the games. But I like the look of El Salvador for a 2-1 win. If they can get a shutout, great, because, listen, Mario Gonzalez is one of the better keepers that doesn't get enough talked about. So I'm going to go 2-1 El Salvador.
In both games?
2-1, and I'll say 2-1, 2-0.
Okay. Give yourself the clean sheet. I like it. Jamie, we'll move on to the next game because I don't want to disrupt Harvey's mojo in that one because that's his team. So on June 2nd at 7:30 and June 5th at 1 p.m., Costa Rica takes on Panama first and then Martinique. Costa Rica is going to win these games. I think the Panama game is going to be a little bit tighter. I still think Keylor Navas gets a clean sheet in both of these games. So give me Costa Rica 2, Panama 0, and then Costa Rica 7, Martinique 0. What do you think there, pal?
I'm going to try and be controversial. So I'll agree they'll beat Martinique by a fair few goals. I'll say 3-0, fairly conservative. And then having seen Panama be fairly aggressive and, generally aggressive whenever they played England, I'll sit on the fence. I'll go with a controversial 1-1 against the favour of your Costa Rica.
Okay, well, at least you said a draw, because if you were going to say that Panama beats Costa Rica, I was going to kick you off the podcast. Harvey, any thoughts on this game?
I'll go 1-1 draws in both games.
Really?
Yeah.
Harvey, let's just, whatever you and I got, is this still about DC United? Because, like, you're coming at me now.
No,
oh, my God. But to Martinique?
They're games 3 days apart. I would say 1-1 draws air.
Oh.
It's going to be hot.
Please.
The pitch won't be clean. It's going to be hot. If you have, all right, just for you then, I'll say 2-0 Costa Rica, 1-1 the other game.
Okay. I will take it. I will take it. Thank you. So since they're playing as we're recording, USA and Morocco, we're going to instead focus on, I think, what's going to be the more fun game, U.S. men's national team versus Uruguay at 5 p.m. on Sunday, June 5th. I don't know, gentlemen, what do you guys think?
I would say, the thing that annoys me, this isn't the Uruguay of old. If it was the Uruguay of old, I'd be way bolder. I'd probably say like a 4-1. But in this case, I would say 2-0 Uruguay.
Okay. Jamie?
Yeah, I think as Harvey mentioned, obviously there's a fair few stalwarts of the Uruguayan national team that have aged out somewhat, whether it be Diego Forlans and even like Luis Suarez and that coming to the latter stage of their career. But I still think as a nation, Uruguay have a lot of history, so it's a good test for the US ahead of this World Cup, which they've got a lot of pressure on their shoulders. So I'll say the US edge it 2-1.
Just because it's Uruguay, this will be the game that gets talked about the most. So you can forget this game against Morocco. You can forget the other game. You can even forget the Nations League games because it's going to be Twitter dominated. Everyone's going to get their shirts a bit too tight. Their muscles won't breathe and whatnot. They're going to talk about this game more than the rest, which will annoy me a bit, but it will be funny to see.
And this game's going to be in Daniel Sperry's realm of Kansas City. Kansas City is looking to host some matches in the 2026 FIFA World Cup. I think Kansas City is going to show out for this game. They have a history of doing that. And boys, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw in this game just because I think that the fan support from Kansas City is going to help the team. I think it's, like Harvey said, I think it's going to be just, you know, nitty-gritty, all types of chaos. But Kansas City has a history of showing out for their team. So, yeah, give me a 1-1 draw in this one. And with that, gentlemen, we will move to last words. We are going to have Jamie go first because he's going to talk about a certain Revolution player who might be out the door.
Yeah, so I don't want my last word to be too long-winded, but what seems out of the blue but also completely predictable is the imminent move of Adam Buchsa, as Seth McCumber, amongst others in the Rev sphere, have been reporting about his rumoured move to France, to Lyon, who had a particularly good season, finished seventh, which was way above any expectations they'd have had. But so it's not something to expect going forward, but still a very good move for Buchsa into the top flight in France. It's a fee rumoured about $6.5 million, which a lot of fans aren't particularly impressed with. They were expecting 10 plus, so there's question marks about why it's a lowish fee and what they'll be able to do going forward, because as it's been well documented, New England have struggled enough as it is. So selling the player who has been arguably the only shining light in these dark times so far, behind a few fullbacks and Carlos Hill, maybe is a worry for the fans. But I think, it's for his career, it was inevitable. As a Polish international with the World Cup on the horizon, there was always the chance of a summer move. So yeah, he'll be joining up with Frankowski as well. He used to play for the Chicago Fire and is also a Polish international in France. So look forward to keeping an eye on him. And then also, as part two of my final word, I'll be interviewing upstart or breaking onto the scene Damian Rivera of the Revs. Speaking to him tomorrow, so keep your eyes out over the weekend for my piece with him.
Good stuff, Jamie. Looking forward to that for sure. Harvey, any last words, my friend?
One of the things that kind of caught out for me is the fact that the Champions League final just came and went, but the weird scenes that happened afterwards, during and before, with French officials essentially blaming fans for causing what was called bottlenecks and crushes on the fence, when there are wild videos of French officials, French police, tear gassing fans and whatnot. And it really got me thinking, when are we going to get to a point where, A, the tickets don't come in paper anymore, they just come through the phone, you can just use your mobile, or when do we realize that, B, we cannot have singers or performers be part of the entertainment when the real actual entertainment is being delayed? Because I was wondering, as I'm watching this, first off, I had to help my dad use his Paramount app to watch the game because he doesn't really have much shows on cable. And of course, you know, parents and technology, it's like, you know how that goes. But I'm showing him the ropes and stuff like that. And I'm watching the events hold on my laptop. And I hear, I'm reading on Twitter that the game's going to be delayed 15 minutes. And this is on the same day as the Rebels playing the DC United game. So I got to wonder, like, how am I going to plan this out? Will I get to the stadium on time and whatnot? The next thing I know, I'm seeing Thierry Henry, Jamie Carragher, and the whole CBS Sports crew. They're just, you know, talking. They're just trying to fill up time. And I feel bad for them because usually you would have, like, the format that you're going to break down, how you go about it. And then it's just, like, a smooth process. But the fact that you had the troubles start out from very early in the crowd, the officials pretty much make things worse, then lie about it afterwards, and then cherry on top with Camila Cabello, who is all right, I don't really care for her music, performing in the middle, and they just roll out this big old carpet, like as if it was like a blanket over a bed. They just roll the thing out. And then they perform for like a good few minutes and then they play the game. I was like, man, we don't really need this stuff. Like, I was actually thinking, why not have a concert at the end of the game? How cool would that be? If you have the final whistle blows, players crying and hugging, confetti all around, you do the trophy lift. And then after that, because the fans are going to stay anyway to take videos of the trophy lift. Then you get to stay afterwards for the concert. The players could probably watch the concert from the field and whatnot. That'd be cool. That's like my only alternative solution. That, and just make the damn tickets go on your phones, man. I do all the time now. I do it every day pretty much for my Rebel events. I'm planning to go to Yankees game, I'm going to download everything. I'm not going to have paper. Why would I have paper for it? We're in 2022. We've moved past this already. Get it to your phone. And just have the thing ready for it, you know.
I love it. That's great. I forgot to ask you guys, where can people follow, find you guys on your Twitters? I don't remember your handles off the top of my head. So Jamie first.
I'll double check. I think it's at RookieJNR13.
Sounds about right. Harvey. Oh, I know yours.
Mine's not as complex as Jamie's. Mine's pretty simple. Sir Harvey Cruz, Instagram, on Twitter. That's where you find me.
Yes, Sir Harvey Cruz. I don't know why I just blanked on yours. So I'm on Twitter at Rachel Kriger, two A's in my name. Not just one, but before I get to my last words, want to thank our two sponsors. First off, gentlemen, are you tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas? Are you looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team? Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price with the motto, any design you want. Seriously, let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. And a big thank you as well to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. I know COVID cases are going up a little bit in parts of the country, so I think they are still selling their neck gaiters. So if you want to check those out too, again, roughneckscarves.com. Thank you to the Beautiful Game Network. Thank you to Last Word on Sports. You can check out all of our written content at lastwordonsports.com/soccer. So my last words, two things. I wasn't on the last podcast, so I'm I'm going to take a wild guess that they did mention it, but just, again, just thoughts and prayers out to the victims in the Uvalde, Texas shooting. It's just senseless tragedy, just awful. Never thought that we would have to say that again after what had happened in Sandy Hook, but yet here we are. Lots of teams in MLS and in the NWSL made a statement wearing orange shirts that said, end gun violence. I'm positive that something will happen or a message will be promoted at the U.S. men's national team game tonight. If you're listening, it was on Wednesday, which is when we're recording. But I just, a feel good story from Wednesday was Ukraine winning against Scotland. At the end, it was getting pretty intense there. And they will play Wales, I think, on Sunday in their European playoff match for a World Cup spot. And what a story, of course, that is for Ukraine, who is dealing with a act of aggression from Vladimir Putin and the Russian government. I don't want to say Russia because, you know, it, as somebody who is Russian, as somebody who has always proudly been Russian, and I've stated this before, it's not the country. It is the just awful leader of that country and his, you know, right-hand henchmen. Lots of people in Russia are against the war. Lots of athletes are against the war. It broke my heart that, you know, Russia isn't going to be competing in the women's Euros this summer. Broke my heart that they weren't allowed to play in these playoff matches for a World Cup spot, but I understand it. At the end of the day, I understand the decision. I respect the decision. And if a team like Ukraine can make it into that last spot, great, good for them. I'm happy for them. I'm happy they won today. I feel bad for Wales because everybody is going to be rooting against them, obviously. But nothing against Wales. It's just, you know, what a story for Ukraine and just the emotions on the players from the pregame press conferences to the match to, you know, after the match, just seeing everybody, you know, of course they didn't want to celebrate too much because there's still a task at hand, but good for Ukraine. I hope that they win. Sorry to Wales. You did nothing to deserve any hate, but everybody's going to be rooting against you this week. But that's going to do it for Last Word on Last Word SC Radio. For myself, for Jamie, for Harvey, thank you again to our sponsors, Roughneck Scars, Icarus FC. Thanks to the Beautiful Game Network and Last Word on Sports. And we will see y'all next time to talk more soccer.